We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's a True Faith podcast. It's Norman, Mark and Simon, and we're lucky enough to be in a room with Ryan Taylor. We're going to ask him a few questions. Ryan obviously doesn't need any introduction to Newcastle fans. He scored one of the most famous goals in recent history, and I were absolutely delighted to be able to put a few questions to him. So, Ryan, thanks very much for joining us. And we might as well just launch straight into the questions. This is one from me. So, who made the move here to sign for Newcastle? Were you a Joe Kinnear choice, or was it someone else in the club? Who was the man who put the feelers out to you?
For me, I mean, I was always in contact with Stephen Taylor, who I think was trying to push it through with Joe, and I actually think Michael Owen had some say in it, but I'm not 100% sure, but I'll always go down as Joe Kinnear's last ever signing.
Did you play with Stephen at England in the 21s, by any chance?
I did, yeah. We had a good friendship, to be honest, when we were away, because as you can imagine, it's pretty boring, and Stephen was always joking around and being Stephen, so you know, a few days with him was always good. So when I came up here, he couldn't wait to get me in the dressing room, just because we sort of knew each other. So, you know, in the early days of being here, I spent a lot of time with him. He was good crack, but, you know, in the end, I think me then having a wife and kids and him still wanting to be that prankster, I think we just sort of didn't spend a lot of time towards the end. But yeah, he'll always be a good friend of mine.
Very interesting. That's I never knew that Stephen Taylor was in. It was an impact on you, saying it was. That's good to know.
What type of club do you walk into? Bearing in mind this wasn't long like post Keegan, then Joe Kinnear taking charge. I know you already said it's going to be a bit of a relegation battle. So what was it like walking in?
Well, I never thought I'd walk in and it'd be a relegation battle, if I'm being honest. And I know I came from Wigan, and I think Wigan were just above Newcastle, but I always thought I was walking into a team of superstars in my eyes, in comparison to, let's say, the Wigan dressing room. You know, because you had some winners in this dressing room. You know, we've won Premier League titles, and it was strange to see sort of the mentality, because I come from Wigan, where it was really a working class club. You know, you went into every game, fighting for every ball, and then you come here and you're just seeing sort of. It just was a little bit different. I mean, the quality was better, but you just didn't see that togetherness in the dressing room. And then it was only until we went down and came straight back up, we got that dressing room.
Aye.
It probably looked like that from the outside anyway, but I think we needed to ship a few out and a few needed to leave in order for us to get that dressing room. And it worked. I mean, you know, the club identified the, if you like, the players we needed to get rid of.
Well, interesting enough, mate, that leads on to
it's quite interesting. You go straight to the kind of promotion as to where things start to click. Like, I was kind of wanting to know what happened when Shearer and Dowie came in. Was there much change in the club and how the training ran and how the feeling around the place when they took charge, or was it too late?
It was for me. I'm thinking that's a great appointment because it's going to give everyone a lift, but it just didn't work. And it was a bit weird. I mean, and I didn't really see where the Dowie connection was. Because when he walked in, I was a bit like, oh, hello. No, I wasn't expecting him, you know. And I know he's a great fella, and I'm sure he's been a great coach in the past. But you know, when you're just not expecting someone, but you know,
yeah, we're gonna, it just kind of mirrors the fans.
But it just, I don't know. I think the fairy tale ending that everyone wanted, with Al keeping us up, it just didn't work. And if I'm being honest, I know we went down and no one wanted to go down, but it sort of got rid of the people who didn't really want to be here anyway. And you know, maybe, you know, it was beneficial in the long run, but you know, I think everyone still would have loved Shearer to keep us in the Premier
League. Well, but this leads right on to the next question. I think what you're saying about Dowie, it probably echoes the thought of a lot of fans. Like when Shearer came in, it was like Dowie just came out of the blue almost. And then, you know, you had the pre-season, you had the relegation, you had the kind of negative feeling around the club, I guess. And obviously the watershed moment for the fans that was reported in the press was the post-Leighton Orient game. Was that for you? That is kind of, is a watershed moment. Was it for you what it was for the fans? It was like, this is, after that game, that 6-1 defeat away, it was almost like things just kind of changed overnight, you know?
I got that feeling, but I'll tell you, I wasn't there. So I can say for sure I wasn't part of that. But obviously then I'm in the dressing room, it was a bit like crisis talks type of thing. This shouldn't happen type of thing, you know. And there was just a good job. Nothing was really riding on it. It did then sort of change. Right, we need to get rid of a few people here.
Well, I'll add to that because Houghton was kind of still caretaker manager for the first couple of months of that season, and I went to Palace away when you banged a cracking goal in down at Palace, and that to me looked like a team that was together and was gonna walk through that division that year. But even at that point, Houghton wasn't, he was still caretaker, I think, at that point. Now as a squad, I mean, I know you're professionals, but were you kind of thinking this is only temporary with Chris and George, it's only temporary, or did you always kind of think about your mind, we're together, Houghton's our manager, this is how it's going to be?
We called him Gaffer. So we as players related to him as our manager. And Chris was a great guy, but what he did have around him was strong people, opinionated people, and in the likes of Kevin and Joey and Alan Smith and Butty. So, and I wasn't obviously one of the experienced ones then, but I suppose, you know, you'd never know, but he would go and speak to them. But, you know, and I'm 100% sure he definitely would have spoke to them individually and got the feelings out, and they would have guided him as to maybe what he did need and what was maybe gone wrong, or, you know, because they were players that were big voices in the dressing room. So I think, for as much as how it looked like Chris was probably doing in control of a big job, I imagine he was getting quite a bit of help doing it. But I honestly believe if my missus was in charge of us that season, we would have went up. Because the team was that good. And because we were such a big team, you know, we'd just gone down. We always had the feeling that when teams were coming here, they were here for a day out. And then we got the feeling that when, you know, if one of the lads knew one of the other players, they were like, oh yeah, we're all staying up, we're out tonight, you know, it's a good night in Newcastle. And it was like, well, there you go, they're up. They're up because they're out tonight.
You know? You didn't lose a game, did you, as well, that season?
You just got the impression that teams who maybe had come up from like League One were coming in and just going, and then it's like 2, 3, 4, and you're like, game over. So
as supporters, that was just one of the best seasons.
Oh yeah, it was.
We never went to any games thinking anything other than when it's a standard 3 points.
I mean, there was even times on like a Tuesday night at Doncaster and stuff, and we knew it was just going to be an ugly game.
Oh, so the game, remember that?
1-0, Andy Carroll.
Yeah. And he wore his gloves and to hide his busted up fingers.
I'm just going to ask, obviously when you went down, did you have any, I don't know, initial regrets in terms of the move? I know you've got some much bigger club than Wigan, but obviously it was difficult 6 months. You'd played in 3 different managers and then we went down the Championship. What was, going for you at that point? Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it and I never want to look back. Yeah. As in, I wish I'd have stayed at Wigan. Because the place is, it's amazing. Yeah. It's only when you leave again, when you're here, you're sort of in it. But then when you leave and you look from the outside, and I've been to many games and come up for many games, you just like, you you just don't realise how lucky you are.
Yeah.
And you do get that when you leave. So even when I was playing, I never ever had like a regret about anything. I mean, I always think back now.
Love you, man.
This is just beautiful to hear.
I mean, and but then when you know, if you want me to say one regret, I wish I didn't jump over the tackle I did against the Traumatos and do me ACL, because you know, if I don't jump over them and I go right through them, then you know, it might have been different, because I was sort of in, if you like, the form of my time here, and we just finished fifth, and everything was going so well. And then we got into the Europa League and I scored away, and it was just like, right, okay, let's crack on now. And then we played them at home, and it was like, yeah, that was the start of like the worst 26 months of my life. Yeah.
Who was you played under a number of managers and coaches, who was the best manager or coach you've played under, and why?
Here or
here?
Okay. Yeah.
And what else?
You know, obviously some people might not agree, but for me personally it was Alan Pardew. But that was because when I was injured for that amount of time, some managers might just put you to the back of the mind, and you know, you'll walk around the training ground and it'll be morning, and then it'll be see you later, and then because you're no good to them basically, you know, and yeah, okay, I'm in the gym and I'm trying my hardest to get back, and it's not even an injury that you can rush back from. It showed that the first time. But for me, he never left me out of anything. He took me on away trips. He even started getting me involved in doing some scouting reports. And he just kept me involved in everything. I mean, and he was great for me on the pitch. And then when I was injured, he was great for me off it as well. So I'd say him. But, you know, looking back, I mean, I've had some good managers, some bad managers, but I'd say he's probably, for me, my favourite manager.
Who would you say, I mean, it may be Alan Pardew, yeah, but in terms of that kind of tactical knowledge of the game when you're actually on the training ground learning, who do you think that you thought, like, this bloke really knows his stuff? I mean, you can see a Pardew again if you want,
I can't really say Pardew, because for someone who sort of had some unbelievable jobs, he was quite crap with players' names. So, you know, if he doesn't know the player you're playing up against, or even know how to pronounce his name, then what chance you got? But, you know, because he had so many people working for him, and his main focus was just winning games of football. So he didn't have to know everyone's name, but I'd say. I mean, when I was younger, I worked for Brian Little, and obviously Brian was finished at like Villa and everything, and he was amazing for me. He really was. But I'm not sure tactically wise. It's a tough one, because I've never had like someone who's like Mourinho.
Benitez.
Benitez. So that's for me. Too short,
but I tell you what, if you go away and think about it, just tweet us and let us know.
I guess the next obvious question is best teammate, both technical ability, but also just to have around the dressing room.
Well, I'll start with the best technical player I've ever played with is Ben Arfa.
Yeah, we knew that was coming.
He was a joke, and he is where he is.
talking about how good he is at football, or.
But he is where he is because of his talent, but he's such a waste though.
He
really is, because he should be playing every week at that level, Champions League football and all that, but I think there's something in his mind.
It's the head, isn't it?
You say manager wise, because he's
I lived in Ponteland just round the corner from him, and say I'd nip to the shop and get, I don't know, some bread and milk, I'd just see him walking around on his own, and it was just like, what are you doing? But like, I just drive past him because he was a bit weird. You know?
psychological, maybe he's just.
I don't know what he was doing. Listen, he can tell you he just went for a walk, but just looked odd to me. You know?
Yeah, But I mean,
I mean, if you want to say about best friend, I have the two of them are still like best friends now. I speak to them near enough every day, and that's James Perch. And Dan Gosling, yeah.
Perch was loved though, wasn't he? Perch was loved at Newcastle.
I think that's just because we're very similar. But all three of us we like the same things, and you know, we've got families and that now, whereas, you know, I bet you thought I was gonna say Stephen, but Stephen's just still a single man, just probably living like a
ridiculous
party boy,
life,
do you know what I mean? Like, and Stephen thinks he's Peter Pan, and love Stephen to bits, but he does. He just doesn't want to grow old. But you know, it'll have to come to him one day, and he'll have kids and a missus and all that. But you know, he maybe just hasn't found that one yet. And he's what now, 43?
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to a question that we could answer for you right now. But your own favourite goal.
There are
two for us, and you know what they are. Let's look at your whole, look at your career at Newcastle, and your career, you know, as a goal. Give us your sort of, maybe it's one goal that's your favourite, or it's one from Newcastle,
okay,
one from elsewhere.
I had 4 free kicks against Newcastle. The one that sticks out is obviously the picture that I'm signing now. That this is like, if I ever relate to myself and the career I had at Newcastle, if I want a little smile to myself, I'll just look at that picture. You know, and
Ryan, you need to watch back your goal against Everton, man.
No,
the best thing I've ever seen.
No, and then you know, obviously for like technique and stuff, because I scored a lot of free kicks in my career, but for that to go in that day and to finish 1-0, amazing. But
yeah,
if you want to look on like a shot with technique, you're talking about the Everton goal, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But people forget, you know.
Palace and Chelsea, were you? What's
yeah, Palace, Chelsea. But I even scored a great goal away to Accrington.
That's right, now in the League Cup.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. So
Gunthorpe as well, just a few days after.
Yeah, after the summer game, yeah. So,
not a bad week.
No, it wasn't actually, yeah.
I remember going again. I always think of when the Wigan edge each time. One of the Boxing Day trips, I think you go straight after half time, but I was actually in the toilet. I came back, my friend was like, Ryan, tell us to go to free kick. I was like,
he hasn't.
Stop lying, look at me for it. I was like, yeah, he's going. I was like,
but it was mad because, like, it was just strange how that did work. And even when I only played once for Wigan at St James's as well, and after 3 minutes, I scored. Like a lob shape given, and it was like, this is just insane. It must just be a thing. I can just score against Newcastle, because I didn't really score many others for Wigan. It just always seemed to be Boxing Day.
Yep.
The JJP.
We remember.
Roomy Christmas, but never mind. I'll forgive you for scoring against the Wagons.
It's Alex here from the True Faith podcast, interrupting the lads' excellent chat that they had with Ryan Taylor a little while ago. Next season we'll have a lot more former players lined up to interview. Thanks to Steve Wraith and Newcastle Legends for providing us with the opportunity to interview all of the lads when they come and do these fantastic live shows up in the northeast. If you like what you hear, I would urge everybody to buy tickets for them. Easily found through Steve's and Newcastle Legends social media. I'm also just going to play you a short clip from one of the bonus podcasts that we do every single week. We got asked all season to do a lot more podcasts, so we'll launch this extra platform called On Patreon. We do 2 to 4 extra podcasts per week. It's £1.25 a week, or £5 a month. If you like these podcasts and hearing us talk about Newcastle United and the World Cup, which is coming up, you'll enjoy it very much. Despite the off-season, we're still doing loads of Newcastle United podcasts. We're going every single pre-season game, reporting from there. So if you like the podcast, consider it. Give it a go. Here's a short clip from the Newcastle squad review we're currently doing. This is part one on the defence, part 2 and 3 on the midfield and attack, out next week and the week after, assessing Newcastle's Premier League squad. Hope you enjoy it. Anyone want to make a defence of Kieran Clark?
Nope.
By the way, the True Faith podcast, player of the season last year and Newcastle's player of the season. Actual player of the season last year. Weird, isn't it?
I thought that when Lascelles was out the team and it was Clark and Lejeune, I thought Lejeune got a lot more flack than Kieran Clark, even though I thought Kieran Clark's positional play was very disappointing. Given what we'd seen in the Championship, albeit a tear down, I don't think Kieran Clark will cut it in the Premier League. What he has going for him is that he's homegrown and that he's steady and he's probably happy just being back up and part of the squad. But you imagine Lascelles or Lejeune getting injured at any point next season, you will panic.
I think, you know what, I disagree one tiny bit there, though I agree with everything else you say. If Lejeune got injured, I'd be a lot more comfortable than the other way around. I think Clark alongside Lascelles would look good, like he did in the Championship. That's the other way around, that's the problem. Clark isn't a leader, he needs to be told what to do, he doesn't read the game very well, and I disagree with you a little bit again. I think his positional play was just as poor as the Championship. Two things, we had to do a lot less defending, so it highlighted less, but he was able to recover against worse players, he was able to get back. You can't do that against better players in the Premier League.
Sure, I mean, the point still stands that in the Premier League, his positional play is not up to scratch, and therefore I'd be nervous about him playing. I'd still rather see Mbemba in there, not speak the lingo.
Is he a sell for you?
He's a sell for me.
Go on to the best game you've played in at Newcastle.
I'll go for 3-0 at home against Man United.
Oh, I mean, that was the ultimate performance, wasn't it? That was the epitome of that kind of season, I think, with the lads we had in the side.
Yeah.
Sure, Lamy, you'll be rinsing Phil Jones and just destroying him as a centre half.
Yeah, and then but that team we had, you know, with like Denver and Shaw were fun. Who would want to play against them? Do you know what I mean? Shaw, just two big fellas, just like oh, you know what I mean. Even like with Rio at the back, I think it was. It was just like we just knew we had strength and goals, and with like someone, if you like a Kabay in the team. He could pull something off and nothing type of thing. So we had a great team that year.
So that whole season was outrageous.
Yeah, I'd probably, that one does stick out in mind because I was here for the 4-4 Arsenal game, and you know that was amazing, but I didn't play in it. So
did you give everyone a bollocking at half time then?
No, I was just upstairs stunned. I couldn't go in the dressing room because I knew. Wow. Oh yeah. I was with my family that day, and then I was just like.
Always want to know what was said in that dressing room.
Yeah, like, I don't even know. I probably stayed upstairs to stay out of the way because I probably would have got the blame or something. Yeah.
Whatever it did, whatever was said, gave Neil Ranger the best moment of his entire life because he came on and absolutely changed the game, didn't he?
Yeah. He nearly scored the winner.
Yeah. We nearly actually won the game 5-4 at the end.
Right, what we've got us. Most difficult opponent that you've played against, I guess individually. So I know you played like every position for a bit.
Yeah, I played against some good players, you know, and we're playing like left back and stuff, which was a little bit strange for me because up until that season, I'd never even been over to the left side.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and then that's where I played a full season, if you like, when we finished fifth.
Yeah.
I played against some really talented players, but they didn't really on the day scare me that much. You know what I mean? I played against Bale, Di Maria.
You ever played against anyone and came off and thought, Jesus Christ?
Well, I came off once when I played away at Arsenal when I was at Wigan, and that was it. And I just thought, wow, and that was Henry. But I wasn't marking him, and I wasn't like anywhere near him. I probably couldn't get near him anyway. But it was just like his presence on the pitch. You know what I mean? It was like, wow, this fella's like a. It's just like on a different level, you know what I mean? Even when I played that many, like quite a few times against, say, Ronaldo, he wasn't as he is on how he probably has been for the last, say, 6, 7, 8 years. He was at the time when he was trying to flick it and be someone who he's not today. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think there was like an aura about Henry?
There was, yeah. And it was like, you know, you looked at him and thought, like, he's good in.
I'm sure many defenders, I think, in that.
Yeah.
Right then, so, I'll tell you what, given your, obvious, you know, your prowess for set pieces, throughout your career, you've played with, like, certain players, certain techniques. Every time you kind of took a free kick or a corner, did you kind of know, right, I know who I'm putting this to, I know exactly what I'm going to do? You kind of adapt to the player you're with. I suppose I'm kind of more thinking of what was it like putting a ball in the box to Andy Carroll, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it was always nice when you put in it. He always wanted it sort of not bent in. He just wanted it driven in. Just something so he could hang, or just something there so he could basically smash someone and score at the same time.
Oh, I miss him.
Yeah, I know.
Some neck muscles that
lad. But again, it was very similar to Shola. Shola would want, you know, he was a bit different. He would want to like run into a ball that's maybe being put in with a like bit of pace on it. But it's, you know, you line up a set play, and the manager will tell you, don't pick someone out, pick an area out. And then you pick that area out, and the player's not there, and you're like, well, maybe I should just pick him out. And it's like, you know, you put in, you know, over your, say, your career, what you think is a good ball, and it probably went to no one. And everyone's like, oh, what a bad ball that was. What are you thinking? That's a good ball, actually. Oh,
well, to take that question on, so did you, let's say you've just said the gaffer would say to you, put the ball into this area, don't worry about picking a player out. Did you ever walk off and say to like one of your teammates, look, right, when now it's going to happen, yeah, I'm going to put the ball in to you, or he's asking you for it? Did you know, you kind of like on the side just said,
yeah,
yeah, he said that, but we're going to do this instead?
Well, we had, you know, like say a free kick, and you'd say to them, look, like, try and be a little bit clever with someone. You'd say, right, this is going near post, so run near post. So, and when it comes off, it's good. It is good. I mean, I've just finished in India now with probably the cleverest player I've ever played with in Robbie Keane.
We've got a question right in India, actually.
And you know, on wide free kicks, he would tell me, I'm going to stand offside, and I'm going to drop back as they all run in, just put it on my end type of thing. Do you know what I mean? And
that's a very Robbie Keane.
You know, it opened my eyes to like another level of cleverness.
Aye.
You know, instead of just saying, yeah, just smash it in there,
aye,
and hopefully someone gets on the end of it, he was actually like, just pick me out.
Aye.
You know.
Just talking about Carroll, how did the sales of Carroll in 2011 and combined 2014, what was the impact on the dressing room?
I just think we knew they couldn't turn the Andy Carroll deal down. It was just, you know, I think it was 35 million for him, and I think at that time you're thinking, well, someone who's not proven in the Premier League, how can you refuse that money? But
yeah,
as players,
time,
yeah, I think as players, we were just, because of who he is and what he gives you in the dressing room and on the pitch, we were like, oh, a little bit deflated and stuff. But you know, and then when you lose someone like a Kabay, you're like, well, fair play. You know, he's going to Paris. It's probably where he wants to go, and he's going to be playing higher. But again, you're thinking, well, I could have done with him this season. You know, a little bit gutting. I mean, I must admit, when Jose Enrique left, I weren't thinking the same. I was thinking, right, go ahead, off your pop, I'll have a game now.
what was it like playing with Jonas? We all love Jonas.
I love playing with Jonas because he, as a left back, and say for instance, I'd never played there before, he always had your back, and it was like he'd be flying into the tackles instead of you type of thing. Do you know what I mean? And he just had your back, as in like he'd always never leave you in like a 1v1 or a 2v1 situation. He put a shift in, like, so for me, you know, he gained everyone's respect just because of that.
So kind of like Ben Arfa, like putting a shift in and flying back in the tackles for you.
Yeah. But again, though, you know, Hatem gave you something completely different going that way. But he just never gave it enough.
I think he was a type of player, didn't really defend. Again,
yeah. The thing is, like, you know, in training against Hatem, say for instance, manager says, right, 1v1s today, 2v2, stuff like that. You'd just be like, right, where's Hatem? And then you'd be like, nothing wrong against him. So like, you'd be like, right, I'll go away, back of the queue. And then like, just so you didn't have, because he was just the worst player you'd ever want, running at you, full pace, drop of the shoulder, you're like, oh my God.
I'm done.
Yeah, you're like, Pat, I've got a game Saturday. You know?
I've talked about that. Then you play left back and right back and centre mid and left wing and right wing and everywhere else. The biggest question we've always had, what is Ryan Taylor's position?
In goal.
Yeah,
from his school years ago, I was an unbelievable keeper, you know.
Seriously?
I used to play in goal, yeah. And I had the Schmeichel kit. For me...
Schmeichel's been doing very well.
I suppose, I'll tell you what, in terms of your career, most effective position is interpreted by other managers, but your favourite position to play?
I started off as like a young whippersnapper right wing back who then moved to just a right back or a right midfielder. So I'd probably say like anyway down the right hand side. I just wish I had about another 3 yards of pace.
Because when you're Tramier, you had a season where you banged double figures in goals.
Yeah, I did. A lot of them pens though, you know. But they look good on the stats.
Goals, man.
Like free kicks, a lot from dead balls, quite a few assists that year, but I don't know. I mean, I've just finished coming away from India, and I played as a number eight. We had three in the middle. I played as a number eight, so I could link up with Robbie, and I loved it. But it's just a different level. Do you know what I mean? You only have to have half a brain. And
well, that's the final question. Give us some pattern in India. What it was like, standard wise, tactics wise, and crowds wise, because they get some big crowds, didn't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I know cricket's just like off the scale over there, but they're really trying to get the football moving in the right direction, which is good, you know, because then there's so many kids out there that, you know, they're just on the streets, and you think, well, you know, even if they just go and play football, do you know what I mean? It was quite heartbreaking to see, but they just don't know any different. But the standard wise over there, I couldn't put it in a league over here, only because I simply don't know. And the fact that you can only play five Fodners at one time and six Indian players, it just sort of keeps it to a level where, again, I just don't know. Because, you know, these Indian boys haven't been playing long. So there's somewhere along the line in a game, you're hoping it's not your team, but there'll be mistakes. And they're normally at the back.
Is Robbie Keane still out there coaching?
He finished up at the team as like sort of manager, if you like, and then he's now back home in Ireland, and then again I'm not too sure what he's doing. I mean, try to find an answer as to what he's doing. He keeps asking me what I'm doing, and I think it's going to be like a late decision for him. I think speaking to him.
Have you got any plans of going back there? Or is that,
do you know what? I have, but I'll keep options open for now because the pre-season's not until August anyway. But you know, for me, it works. Going out there playing football, you're sort of away from the bubble of being a player in England who's had, if you like, a good career, and then if you drop yourself down just to keep playing, I feel like you're just under scrutiny. And people are just judging you. And you're like, well, you know, one man can't just make a team. You know, so and that's why it just works. I go out there and you know, you almost feel like you're back in my 20s again, because you just they love you, and you're with the experience you've got and stuff, it just makes sense. But I mean, I'll wait and see if something comes up, and if something comes up, you know, I'll happily consider it.
Fair enough.
I just had one fair question, kind of clear up. In terms of when you were released at Newcastle, was it that true that was a phone call from Carver?
It was. I was on my coaching license over in Ireland. We just came out of a lecture, which was like halfway through, and then my phone rang with JC on it, and I was like, oh, what? And I'm not stupid, do you know what I mean? And I hadn't heard nothing from the club whatsoever, and the season's over, the West Ham game's gone, and the season's over, and I kept asking Jonas because he's on the same course. Have you heard anything? No. Have you? No. And then, you know, next minute my phone goes, it was John, and And I wasn't stupid. I could just as soon as we started talking, I knew that the Newcastle time was over. It was disappointing the way that happened, but I can't look and blame John. I can't, John's a good guy.
That's all right, all right.
John's a good guy. He was just under orders. Simple as.
Well, fair enough. Ryan, massively appreciate this.
Just quickly, Christmas 2015. I saw you and the whole boys in Asper's Casino. Was that your idea? Did he have a good night? You must have brought him up here.
I can't remember, actually.
He's so must have been a good night. Jumpers, yeah.
Yes. The whole Newcastle, no, that wasn't my idea. But when it got put into... we had a little chart on the board and put your name as to where you want to go, and I think there was like three options, and of course it had Newcastle. Yep, I'll take that one.
It wasn't David Miller trying to look for Corbett Air for
Do you know what? I think it was. it was Myler who organised it.
There you go. Well, look, Ryan, thanks ever so much. Massively appreciated. Appreciate this, and just brilliant. It's been a True Faith podcast, and cheers, Ryan. Thank all you. The best you
Cheers,
made.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.